Welcome to Disruptive Minds Business Podcast. I'm your host, Tevye Ohol, CEO of Takota Accounting. Today, please welcome our guest, Jonathan Amon, founder of WEVA, Wedding Event Venue Association. I can speak today, and founder and CEO of Common Sense Events. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you so much for having me. This is going to be a fun conversation. I'm excited that you're having me on the show.
Yes, I'm hoping we can get some good conversation going. A little bit, I've told you this before, my background for the listeners, I actually started my company because I went down the road of buying an event venue and we didn't end up closing that deal. And it spurred me into the company I am in today. And so this is near and dear to my heart. So we will definitely, I think, have a fun conversation. So with that, I will jump in. I love to start with our disruptive question. What you're doing, I think, very closely fits that, which is why you're here today. But from your own words, what would you say is something disruptive that you're doing in the industry or that you are being seen in the industry?
That's a great question, kind of an interesting take on what we're doing. So we run essentially three different things. We have the Venue RX podcast, we've got WEVA, Wedding and Event Venue Association, and then we have Common Sense Events. And Common Sense Events is a management company that is very hands-on. We're really, getting our hands dirty, so to speak, in all of the properties that we manage. So it's not easy by any stretch of the imagination. It's labor intensive, it's employee intensive, and we do it across multiple states. So essentially what we do, we go in and we manage wedding venues for property owners. Property owners could be investors, could be real estate folks, could be private owners that just don't have an interest in actually running a wedding venue business, but they have a beautiful piece of land that's zoned correctly and they want to find ways to monetize. So that is what we do there. The way that we're disrupting things is we have a significant online presence through the Venue RX podcast and YouTube show, as well as WEVA, that venue association. And the goal there is to provide education and basically increase the resources and the education that's available to the venue industry. I really feel like there is a lack of education, and primarily it's because we've been a cottage industry for many years. It's highly unregulated, which has its pros and cons. And so we're doing everything we can to provide free education to folks and then community through the association to help bring that awareness to best practices around how to manage and operate venues. And then we also have the credibility. Our company's done over 6,000 weddings at this point, and we're in the trenches. We're not just an armchair consultant kind of telling you what maybe could work or should work. We actually tried it, we failed or we succeeded, and we're reporting back on that.
I love that so much. I mean, 6,000, events, that's a lot of happy memories. That's you guys are doing important things. So, I mean, I love that. I want to talk a little bit about your first to market of being an association for wedding venues. I know you talked about providing education, but like, what was the seed of that you realized that there was a need for that and that you were the one that was going to fill that? How did that look like?
Yeah, another great question. I almost wish there was like some really cool, selfless story, but it was because I needed help, realistically. Like, as we were going through this journey of operating multiple wedding venues, I was looking for best practices. I was looking for support. I was looking for some of those things. And I had the really, great fortune and blessing to have the Venue RX and have those connections to other venue owners. But I found that there, all of the people that I was talking to often didn't have those same connections because maybe they didn't have the podcast as a way to connect with people. And also in the venue industry, it's very competitive. You're not really interested in talking to your neighbor who's a couple miles down the street because you share the same potential clientele and you don't want to say, hey, Greg, or hey, Cynthia, like I'm not getting the bookings, or I'm rushing it with this. Kind of don't want to say that. You're kind of keeping a little close to your chest. So, the association was a way to share knowledge across the entire country, and you can have a venue that's maybe beachfront in Florida that can share some best practices with a beachfront property in California, that you're not competing for the same clients. There's a little bit more freedom in sharing those that information. And then and to be honest, nothing existed. Like, we are first to market with that. There are other associations, or they kind of have that title. I think there's I don't know if it's actually called the Venue Association, but there's a couple of Facebook groups essentially. And don't get me wrong, love a good Facebook group, but the format of that is less professional trade association and more kind of group watering hole where we can all kind of complain, or we can, share encouragement or whatever. But it's a little bit more of like the industry's water cooler versus a professional trade association. And the goal there is to have yearly events. The goal is to continue providing the education that we provide. We have monthly monthly calls, and we've got a bunch of resources and support inside the association. But we also have an app. We have a dedicated website that has all of the support, resources, tools, discount codes for things that people are going to need. So our goal is to really build that into the kind of the main industry powerhouse for venues, so that they can like thrive, flourish, and really get connected. And if you're brand new to the wedding industry, we want you to be able to start with Weeva and say, "Hey, I'm brand new to this. What are the ground rules? What do I need to know to get started and to be successful?"
Well, I think every owner in any industry really is looking for how do I learn from those that came before me, and that way I'm successful quicker. So the fact that you're providing that in an industry that really didn't have that solution is really special for other event owners out there. I hope that, they're finding you guys and using those resources. I know in accounting, we're a part of an association, and same thing. I mean, I think the takeaway here for the entrepreneur listeners is if you are not a part of an association for your specific industry, find one, because we all have competition concerns of, do we share insider secrets, what's working, what's not. But if you can find an association such as Jonathan's, you're going to be better off. You're going to be in good company where everybody, is trying to succeed together. So I really applaud you for taking that leap and getting that done for your industry. So thank you on behalf of the wedding industry.
Yeah, totally. It's funny you said the industry, the association part. I really do strongly believe that it's so easy to get busy with, your own personal family and personal life, and then you've got your business. And between those two things, sometimes for the very driven kind of type A personalities that we often have when there's, business owners, entrepreneurial folks, it's easy to kind of say, "I'm just going to do this all by myself," and you'll do the research online or you'll do some of those things, but you don't really want to say, "I'm struggling with this." You want to kind of just keep blazing ahead. And part of growth is admitting, "Hey, I don't know this. I'm struggling with this. I'm not getting enough clients, or I'm having a hard time marketing, or we're thinking about doing paid ads for this specific service or product." And you share that with someone who's a little further ahead. And the folks who are further ahead because they have those relationships. So, to your point, 100%, join an association, find your kind of tribe within your industry, and we hope we can be that for venue owners.
Yes, absolutely. And secondary to that too, there's great business groups that might not be an association, but they give you that community that you can, it's out there. You don't have to do it alone, and it doesn't have to be a scary thing. I mean, we all like to think that we're doing something different, but in business across industry, we're solving the same things. How do we get in front of our client? How do we find the person? How do we close the deal? I mean, it's all relative. So I did like something that you said. I want to ask a question on about challenge, and especially with what you're doing. So what currently are your challenges in what you're building? And you have the couple different companies going on. What are you working to solve right now, and what resources, are you using to get through those?
Definitely. So I'll kind of hit this question in two different ways. Time management, like for me as a CEO and as a founder of some of these different things, it's time management and making the conscious decision to say no to kind of good uses of my time, to focus on the uses of my time that no one else can do. And that's challenging because I'm also a very practical person, and I'm like, I can do this. I'm able
Sure.
to do this, but should I be doing it? And it feels tough when you're like, I could pay someone $20 to $25 an hour, but we all have a rate. You know, we all have kind of our own personal rate. And I would, for anyone listening, you know, or watching, I would set kind of an aspirational hourly rate for yourself. And if you can hire someone to do what you're currently doing for less than your rate is worth, you should be doing that. And you should kind of be buying back your time. You know, Dan Martell talks about buying back your time in a number of his different
Yeah.
resources online. And I've had him as a coach and mentor for a while, and kind of that idea of buying back your time. So for me, time management is definitely a struggle, and kind of consistently going back to that, because it's a habit that you have to build. You have to be comfortable saying, I don't do that. And that's something that is, I think, very difficult for entrepreneurs, especially founders, because we do everything, right? But we've got to shift away from that, and we've got to start prioritizing correct and efficient and appropriate uses of our time. So that's number one. Number two, kind of a practical approach on this. We are heavy users of technology that can help make our time use more efficient. So when it comes to meetings, when it comes to project management, when it comes to communication, we're looking for ways that we can use systems and automation to streamline the amount of time. You know, we were just talking right before we got on this call. You know, I have AI note takers in this call, and that creates a recording, it creates a transcript. I can pull out social media content from that. I can send it to a team member if I want them to hear something that we talked about. I can hire a video editor, we can put together a reel. Like, there's so much that we can do just by adding that one piece of technology. And then also, of course, things like Asana, which is a great project management tool. There are so many others out there, monday.com, Wrike, there's Basecamp, there's, I mean, we've tried a bunch of them. But yeah, using these pieces of technology to kind of track what's happening in your business gives clarity to you as the business owner, but then it also allows your team to fit within a structure where there's clear metrics on what does success look like. Project starts here, individual checkpoints, and then projects ending here, to whatever the level of expectation and success, like what does that look like? And it's hard to know what success looks like without a defined beginning, defined
Yes.
end, and those metrics.
Yep, that's awesome. So many takeaways here, guys. All right, we have find your clarity, make timelines, give your team KPIs, rocks, whatever you want to call them, make sure you have good time management, are delegating and tech that helps, with efficiencies. I like to say, when I guest on podcasts, it's so funny because a favorite question is it's so hard for entrepreneurs to give things away, and I love to encourage any listener, like, throw that out the door, let it go however you can. I got to tell you, my favorite thing is to give something away. Like, it's so helpful. So you can spend all of your time on what you started this with, which is your unique ability. And when you hammer in on all of your time is on your unique ability to the best that you can make that happen, your company will just scale incredibly. So I want to ask just a couple interesting questions I thought of, industry specific. And one would be, you have a unique position being a part of an association, but also helping with hiring for different venues, similar to what we do. We help many, many, many companies and get to see the back end. And so with that knowledge, say with especially, you'll probably share this information and you have venue owners that listen. What is something that you wish venue owners would do to help themselves that maybe they're not always seeing?
That's an interesting question, because from the standpoint of the venue owner, like, you have to, and I think any entrepreneur, any leader, right? You have to have your cup has to be filled before you can pour into someone else's life. And as entrepreneurs, kind of the definition of that is we're creating things that don't exist, right? To solve needs that people have. And we're finding those kind of spaces in the market for what you do, right? With the accounting, with the bookkeeping, all of those things, you're focused on taking care of a pain point in someone's business. And so I find that whenever I'm not actively finding ways to invest in myself and get better as a leader and kind of fill my cup, whether it's with books, I've got, you know, a couple different things here that I'm reading, whether it's books or coaching or mentorship or being a part of an association, If my cup's not filled, I don't really have very much to pour into my team with. So I would say that is really key, really across industries, not just kind of in the venue owner category.
I love that so much because it's general enough that anyone can use it. And so thank you, for that. And it really is true. Venue owners, I know more than other owners would. It's so much work. I mean, you're on site, you're doing all the things, and it's very easy to get run down. So the reminder to fill that cup is so important. I do want to ask an interesting question. It's, a couple years old, but the effects of it are still now, which is, I know that the wedding venue or venue in general industry really had a hard time over COVID because there was a lot of time where, you had to cancel events you couldn't have in person. That's done and gone. You guys made it through that. But what do you see from the industry, from your unique perspective, that was taken out of that hard time that you would consider a positive that was like learned and applied out of that difficult time?
This is such an interesting question because depending on where you were during that time, some people really thrived during that time period because they were able to build their venue or even complete their venue.
Oh, okay. Almost like downtime, taking advantage of downtime. Okay.
So there were some people that, I've actually interviewed them on the podcast, that they created their business during kind of some of that white space they had during COVID. And then when they were able to open back up, it was really kind of their actual opening. And so that kind of provided some white space that they maybe wouldn't have had otherwise because everything was on pause, right? That's kind of looking at it on the positive side. Now, there were a lot of folks who really, really struggled, who had existing businesses. They had to postpone. They had to cancel. Many businesses did not make it. We saw kind of a bit of an exodus in the market, but then we also saw a huge influx of venues. And the interesting thing to me, what it did for kind of mass market, like our clients, they are, and also this kind of coming up to an election year. So even though we did make it through, 2024 was a difficult year for the industry. In terms of kind of the cycle, the business cycle, we had 2020, 2021, but then 22 and 23 was really a wave of the cancellations, the postponements, the folks that, kind of had those relationships that formed during 2020 and 2021. There was, of course, the engagement gap that is, people have talked about where it was a little bit slower. People had a slower time meeting and getting engaged. And so things got pushed out. I'm seeing that people are looking for 26 dates, 2026 and 2027 dates, but then they're also planning a wedding in 6 months, which was unheard of before. Like you didn't do that unless you were crazy or very ambitious, but we're seeing people that are, having weddings in the 6 month or 9 month window that are planning these events very quickly. And so that adjustment in the booking time has created oftentimes gaps in booking for venues that normally are used to filling up their calendars sooner. Now they have these great available dates open and they're not used to it. And there's a little bit of nerves and a little bit of tension, a little bit of like, oh my gosh, are we okay? Like, are we gonna make up numbers? So it's shaken things up. I think it's allowed for new players to come in the market, which is, I think, a good thing, and competition is good. I think it's been helpful for many of us to kind of get refocused on why we're in the industry. And if you're in the industry because you felt like it was super easy and this is just a great way to make a lot of money, like some of those folks, I think, are falling out of love with it as fast as they fell into love with it. But it's also really refining the love and appreciation that those kind of legacy venue owners do have for the industry, because you've got to dig in and you've got to be creative and you've got to adapt with the times, so with AI and like everything that's happening. I mean, it's a really mixed bag when we're talking about, effects of the pandemic, but I think we're still probably 2025, things will even out a little bit more. But definitely 24 was a tough year for folks where we were still feeling not direct impacts, but more secondary and tertiary impacts.
Sure. Well, it's so interesting that, like, see, right there, I made an assumption that maybe you were through it, but there's still, like, you're talking about those additional waves that come through that have to be sorted out. I do want to touch on, so it's, a hot topic in the industry, hard to avoid at this point. How are you finding AI and new tech options, coming into your industry? How are you using them? What is that doing for you?
I love this because AI, like I'm obsessed with gadgets and tech and tinkering with stuff. And like, I want to, like, even on the podcast, like, what mic is going to work well or how are we going to set this all up? And so there's a side of me that typically tends to be an early adopter on the AI side. And then, of course, like, there's tools like ChatGPT that people have used for a while now. One of the things that I'm seeing is while you can definitely use AI tools, and there's so many of them out there. I think there's still a little bit of a gap, and this is going to be shrinking, the gap between being able to use them 100% and being able to just kind of use them and then need to do your own thing. What I mean by that is, for example, if you're going to write a blog and you're going to use ChatGPT or you're going to use, Claude, or you're going to use Perplexity or Gemini or whatever it is, right? And you're going to put in a prompt. You do need to have a really good prompt, but then you need to go back in and edit it. And you need
Yes.
to really like, and I don't know at this point, like if you know what you're talking about, I don't know if it would be faster to just kind of write it yourself and then ask AI to maybe refine it, versus trying to just put in a short prompt and then refine it over 10 iterations. I still think we're a little, there's a little bit of time between today where, these AI tools are very cool and there's like a novelty component to it. And then when they're actually able to like really be usable, because the end client, like if there's just a generic AI written blog, it's not going to help you as much with SEO. People are going to know generic and it's written with AI. And same thing if you're using like an AI agent or like an AI bot on your website. Same thing even with some of like the recording tools. There's a tool that I have in here right now. It records the show and then it's going to give me some recommendations for follow-up questions. I'm going to go in there and delete 90% of it because it's going to be kind of irrelevant. They're going to say follow up with Tevye on, accounting. And like that might be cool. Like I might want to do that, but then there might be other ones that are like, just irrelevant stuff that AI picked up because there's no framing. And so I would say for venue owners, but even just business owners, look at the tool and don't get romantic about, oh, this is not the old days how we used to do things, but also don't be so quick to jump into the new tool and just trust it that it's going to solve your problems. Like there's no magic bullet, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And it's going to take a while for AI to really be where it needs to be for it to completely take over like a section of the business. It really needs to be heavily modified and massaged to make sure it's meeting the needs of your clients.
Of course. I love that you said don't get romantic about it. It just takes me to like that's such an entrepreneurial answer of like leave the emotions at the door, which is totally fair. And we talk to our team about this all the time. Use the tool as it's meant to be used and frankly where it's at today, which is use it to help ideate, use it maybe to adjust or even level up if you want your communication. But you must come around at this point and review. And so, to your point, did you spend enough time doing that where you could have just kicked it out on your own? You have to decide that on your own and determine what works for you. But I know when I'm trying to do content stuff, podcast questions, all the things, I'll use it for ideation. And just like you said, 90% of it is disregarded, but it's that one or two questions or ideas that help that, get you on another path. And that's, definitely helpful at this point. So, look into that, see how you can use those tools.
Yeah, I wanted to add one thing here. One thing I've noticed that has been a huge help for me is kind of forcing code switching and forcing kind of creativity almost. And what I mean by code switching is, I do the three different things, right? Common Sense Events, VenueRx, podcast, and YouTube, and then Weeva, the association. And so for me, if in my day I'm going from Common Sense Events, working on a venue in Connecticut, let's say, to recording a show for the Venue RX, and I need to quickly switch, and I need to ask some good engaging questions. But maybe my mind's over on a P&L for the ranch in Connecticut. It helps me code switch from that mindset into, hey, I need questions. Like you said, it's going to give me 10 questions. I'm going to pull out two that I love, but then that's going to actually spark me thinking creatively and getting into this new zone. And it helps shorten the time of that code switch kind of from one business to the next.
Yeah,
So,
almost helping in the time blocking is another way I would say that, for understanding.
absolutely.
That's so smart. All right, so you mentioned P&L, so I'm gonna go right there. I always love to do a financial facts segment, which is just something our other owners can hear how an owner is using their financials, what KPIs, what factors matter to you, and maybe that helps them spark what might work for them. So, Jonathan, my question is, what are you using in your financials as the CEO of these different companies? What helps you know where you're at, where you want to be? What do you need to pay attention to?
Totally. So P&L, yes, but statement of cash flows and balance sheet, like those are the three,
Ooh.
right? You've got to do that. And you know this obviously, but for this unfortunately is something that I skipped over in college. I didn't learn much from college from entrepreneurial, like on the entrepreneurial side of things, but I should have paid more attention in accounting classes because it really like those statement of cash flows really matter. Balance sheet really matters. Oftentimes, I believe venue owners we're looking on a cash basis, typically cash-based accounting, and we're looking at our P&L because we're kind of wanting to track how much in sales do we make, month over month. Those other two reports you have to look at: statement of cash flows, balance sheet. You've got to look at it. You're really not going to get a complete picture of your business unless you are looking at all three of those. And if you're starting out, like I very much started out just kind of going on a gut feel, like, do we have enough money to make payroll? What's kind of coming in? With the wedding industry, obviously, you've got that first non-refundable payment, and then you've got second, third, maybe fourth payment, depending on how you're having it set up. And so, understanding, like, where's your cash coming from? Do you have enough money to hire a new team member? And that's something that we're even working on now. I would say, if you could only remember one thing from my answer, though, your gross profit, your like revenue actually does not matter. Your net revenue matters. And everyone wants to talk about the big sexy number, like on the top, like the gross revenue number, but you that's a vanity metric, and it doesn't, like, it really doesn't matter. And for an experienced business owner, it's not what there's that the whole saying, it's not what you make, it's what you keep, and that is really what matters. And the work that you do, you could have this huge organization making millions and millions of dollars and actually be losing money, right? And we see that. And unless you're like a tech company, or unless there's some other play and there's investments coming in, and there's like, unless you're Amazon, right? Or some of these other large organizations, small businesses doesn't, it's not as an effective way to look at it. So net revenue, net revenue, net revenue.
I love that. You get like so many gold stars here. I don't usually get those as answers. So my like little heart is Twitter-pated right now because I'm always trying to teach the clients exactly what you're saying. Owners, and if you're listening to this, they love, love, love a P&L. And I totally get that because that's the immediate result. However, as you said, life of your company, number one, cash is always king. It doesn't really matter what your P&L says if you don't have cash to operate with, if your terms are too long, if your clients aren't paying, if you have AR problems. These things are so prevalent. But what you're saying is so important because your equity and everything long term lives on your balance sheet, and your cash, you must understand how the cash flow is going. So I'm just so you're showing your experience here, which is exactly why you're on the show. So good job. And I'm sure your financials look fantastic, but you're exactly right also. I mean, it's all about ego at the top of the P&L, and to your credit, it honestly almost makes no difference. It's all about how you perform. It's pulling out your education in financials in the meat of the P&L of like, how are you operating? Are your percentages you're spending correct? I mean, so many good takeaways here of everything you guys can pay attention to in your own financials.
Yeah, and I would also add, it doesn't always, like, it's going to be different for everyone. And depending on what your goals are, like, if you're running a lifestyle business and you're really trying to write off a lot of personal expenses and you're trying to take as many tax breaks as possible, and like, you may not want to show a lot of revenue. But then if you're trying to get a loan or you're trying to buy assets and you're using, your P&L, like, people are like, oh, they'll take an owner's draw, but they aren't giving themselves the correct W-2. Their W-2 is so low, the owner's draws. You can kind of work through that with a bank if you're trying to buy a house or, use those financials for something, but it's a lot more difficult than actually paying yourself a fair wage, which then goes into cash flow. We struggled for so long with really not paying ourselves any W-2, even though we're W-2 employees. We were just taking owner's draws because we were using that windfall to kind of help with the cash flow issues. So all that to say, it's going to look different, but understanding kind of why you need to be analyzing those three reports is really important. And then I would also say something huge for us that isn't directly related to any of those three, but was transformational for us, is a stoplight report. A financially driven stoplight report, meaning, where are you red, where are you yellow, where are you green? Red. And each of those having a zone. So just quick example, and I won't go on this too long, but in every area of the business, we have a stoplight metric. It might be leads coming into the business. And it all flows down. So it's leads coming to the business, leads converted into on-site tours. That could be a consult call. If you're in accounting or, roofing or whatever, like, people seeing your stuff, people actually talking to you about your stuff, and then people paying for your stuff. So those kind of three at the top, and if you have a range, like, hey, we need to get two leads a week, and we need to have one of those conversations, and then every month we expect two bookings. Like, it's going to be different for everyone, so you're going to know your own industry, but putting that on a stoplight report, actually in a spreadsheet with a red, yellow, green, and being able to look at it allows you year over year to understand where's your business really going. And then if you have it at the top of the funnel where you're looking at marketing, you can tell where your cash flow is going to be in 30, 60, 90 days, assuming your AR isn't crazy. That's a thing.
There's always a
But
caveat.
there is a caveat. Yeah. But assuming that isn't the case, like, if you stop getting the leads that you need, 30, 60, 90 days down the line, you're going to be hurting in cash received. So, stoplight report, I would say, is a great kind of auxiliary piece and spreadsheet to help you track performance.
Another form of talking about that would be a scorecard. Some entrepreneurs might, hear that and understand that differently. So, but all of these things are so important. These are great takeaways. A good job, Jonathan. I'm going to dive real quick into the last couple top-end questions I like to ask for our listeners, which are, kind of exciting to hear from you and where your brain is going, which is like, what are you excited about right now? Where are you going with your company, and what does that look like in the next, 3 to 5 years?
That's a massive question. I think one of the things that I'm really excited about right now that I'm working on is a venue that I co-own here in Alabama. I was born and raised in Texas. We lived for 12, 15 years in San Diego, and now we're out here in a suburb of Birmingham, and we're building a absolutely stunning, it's over 33,000 square feet venue and event space. It's going to have space for corporate. It's going to have obviously main wedding area, reception, cocktail ceremony, all of those ceremony, cocktail, reception. I've done a few weddings. But it's going to have the production space. It's going to have a podcast studio actually that we're building into it. So that's been super fun because I've been able to stretch my knowledge and learning over just kind of operating a business to actually building a facility and talking about engineering and MEP, mechanical engineer, electrical plumbing, all of the FF&E, furniture, fixtures, equipment, like, all of this stuff. Like, I've been learning this stuff and I love it. So really excited for that. That venue should be open here in the next 3 to 6 months. Really excited for that. I want to spend a lot more time than I'm currently spending on Weava. I think that probably is the thing that I'm most excited about of all of the things that I do, because I feel like Weava has the potential to completely transform the venue industry and by proxy, the event industry as a whole. There are wonderful associations for meeting planners and for catering companies and for DJs and for florists. And like, there are so many amazing associations for all of these other trades, but the venue is the house that all of these things, like, you don't have, if you, none of the other stuff matters. Like, florists are great, but they put their flowers or their installations inside a building, inside a facility. So for me, I feel like as the venue community, it behooves us to really rally together. And honestly, like, I wanted to join one. Like, I only created something because it didn't exist. And if something better, I've been still looking. If something better exists, I'm going to join it. But, you know, Weave, I think, is important because we have the potential to change the venue industry, and like I said, by proxy, change the event industry as a whole. And so I'm just really excited about that. And I think if we could do a good job with education and get a certain number of members, we can also have lobbying power to be able to get, you know, regulations passed around liquor laws and things like that that will really, really help impact our industry. And that's very much what was missing during the pandemic. Restaurants had their piece of the pie. There was funding. There was some like relief for them. Venues were in this weird place where like a owner-operated venue is just kind of like out in the wild. And we weren't hotels, we weren't restaurants, we weren't Airbnbs. Like the whole VRBO, Airbnb, like short-term rental thing, there's kind of a category for that. We're such a weird mix of all of those things. We didn't have representation. So I'm hoping long-term Weva can really grow into being a huge support and an advocate for the venue space and representation among other industries as well.
Well, lots to do. I think that's going to keep you busy, and I have no doubt that you'll make a big difference in that space. So look out for, Weva and look it up and see how it can help your company. All right, last question before our outro that I love to, ask, which is, you talked about filling your cup before. So I love to ask our, CEOs, our founders, what is it that works for you to fill your cup so that you can turn back to your company and make sure, that these big goals happen?
That's a great question. You know, I think there's a like a fancy answer and a simple answer. So I'll like give you the simple answer first. Go back to the basics. And I forget this all the time. Like, how much have I eaten today? You know, am I drinking water? You know, am I exercising? Am I moving my body? Am I getting some sun? Like, some of these are really basic things that we forget to do. And like, you know, it's almost 1 o'clock here. I forgot to eat breakfast this morning. You know what I mean? And
I was just thinking, I was like, I have not had a meal yet today. So, but I did
yeah.
exercise, so point me.
Kudos. Kudos. But but all that stuff, like we are whole beings, you know, we're the sum of so many parts. And if your arm and your leg are not working, but your other arm and your other leg are working great, like you're not going to be effective. As effective as you should be. So again, simple answer, like take care of the basics. Simple scales, fancy fails is a term, is a little phrase that I like.
I like that.
And so yeah, go back to the basics. That's number one. But then number two, if you've kind of got those basics figured out, and it doesn't have to be balanced, like wake up at 4 a.m. You know, like
What's balance?
yeah, what's balance? I have six kids, you know, and you know, that combined with all these other things, like there is no balance for me, but I have found balance, my own version of balance. So find your own version of balance. Don't judge yourself based on what other people tell you balance is. Like, mental health is really like what you make it, and your version of balance could be someone else's hell, you know, like.
Everybody's individual, their health plan for sure.
Totally. In terms of books, though, like whether you're a reader, whether you're a listener, like it does make sense to fill your own cup. And I would say community matters. Like, we are meant as humans for connection and to have that community. And it looks different for everyone. Like, if you're more introverted versus more extroverted, that's going to look different for you. But, you know, find the community, find the one or three or 10 people that you like to bounce ideas off of that encourage you. Don't be afraid to, you know, cut that list down. Like, if you have relationships in your life that are not serving you, don't be afraid to get those out. Like, less kind of cutting that out could actually be the thing that inputs the most into your life. So, that, and then, yeah, read books. Like, find people who have done things that you want to do who are talking about it, and focus on those folks and check out what they're doing, watch what they're doing, not necessarily what they're saying, you know? And
Actions
I've
are louder than words. Sure. Yeah.
absolutely, absolutely. I'm reading a book, this book right now called Whatever It Takes. And then I'm also right here. I also, there's a church that I go to. This is kind of odd and different, but they have this whole growth track. And it's like a whole pamphlet of how to like get involved in the church. And I love the, it's Church of the Highlands, second largest church in America. I love the intention behind the design of how they have this set up. It is set up like a brilliant business, not just a religious organization. So, I mean, I'm finding inspiration from a couple of different places, and just want to encourage you. Like, there's so much to do, and it's so easy to be overwhelmed. Be kind to yourself. You know, macro patience, but like micro hustle. But don't lose track of the fact that like it's going to take longer than you maybe think it will. And just kind of stay positive with that. And it's fun. You know, if you look back on it with a little bit of perspective, the growth, the journeys, the mistakes, it's a blast.
Wow. All right. That is a lot to take away with. So many wonderful nuggets in this episode. Jonathan, thank you so much for your time today. Listeners, as usual, I'm Tevia Holst. I own Takota Accounting. Please reach out to Jonathan Amon, founder of WEVA, again, Wedding and Event Venue Association, Common Sense Events CEO and founder, and also podcast host of Venue RX. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.